epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with All Trails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
When you haven't found love, it can feel like everyone else has. It's in every movie, every song, and all the PDA. Looking for love sucks. Thankfully, California Psychics can give you the guidance you need to find the one. We guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
He's Jacob Burgess, and he's next.
And now, from the legendary Studio B, so you're in Seattle with Gregor.
Jacob's slogan, his catchphrase, I make words happen. It's a significant distinguisher between the dumb stuff we do on the radio and how he brings words to life from a script to your ears.
It tickles.
We first crossed paths at an improv show where he commanded a Scottish accent. That might be a brogue, Scottish brogue, what? Telling a story of getting schooled in the ways of whiskey or scotch or I can't remember. It's fun because I think you identify somebody as like a thing. You're like, you're a voice actor, therefore you sit at home in a studio and do voice acting, but you actually also have hobbies like going to an improv show and seeing another person there.
Yes, indeed. And I was actually there seeing the show ahead of time so that I could do the podcast after with a professional. I was on the, they invited me, they had me as a guest on that podcast, and then they invited me back to be on the panel when they were interviewing a professional wrestler named Ethan HD.
Yeah.
And it is the worst kept secret that I have is that pro wrestling is my deep, deep-seated, like, guilty pleasure. I, like, just a crazy encyclopedic kind of knowledge about pro wrestling. I love pro wrestling so, so much. So they invited me on the panel because they're like, you speak wrestler, and we want to understand kind of what this guy is saying.
You might even
and,
know a little too much for him.
It was, we became like instant friends. He's,
oh, cool.
He's absolutely amazing. He's a great, great wrestler. I've watched a lot of his matches. His name's Ethan HD. He's fan-freaking-tastic.
He caught up in this NXT series that's,
yeah.
I know it was just in Seattle, and so
yes.
I saw a bunch of people posting about it and stuff, and
yeah.
I don't really know much about wrestling. I've been to one major event and it was awesome.
Yeah, I so NXT is the WWE's. Oh, dude, this is going to be the whole
let's go,
freaking
come on,
thing.
Do it.
NXT is the WWE. You know, the big, you know,
yeah.
The big guy, WrestleMania and all that.
Yeah,
that's their developmental brand.
Yeah,
and that's actually run by Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Paul Lundquist's. I'm probably pronouncing his last name wrong.
That's fine.
But it's actually run by Triple H, like of
oh,
Generation
yeah.
X and stuff. Like he runs it, and it's amazing. The shows are on the WWE Network. It runs for about an hour, and it's tight, concise. The wrestlers are hungry, like they're really, really good. And they started touring last year. Yeah, they started touring last year, and they recently came to Seattle. I unfortunately had to miss it because I had stuff, and it broke my heart into 1,000 pieces.
It's weird seeing it was at the Paramount Theater, and I just saw footage, and it's weird seeing that it's a theater. It's not a it's not a like a sports arena or anything.
Yeah,
like I've seen like you know. Beautiful plays there, and also bands play and stuff, and now
yes.
There's wrestling footage that I've seen.
And now there's sweaty men smacking each other around, and women's wrestling, which is, like, in my mind, like, above and beyond a lot of what, like, the guys are doing right now, too. Like, it's just so damn good.
So, I mean, so, you must have grown up in the right generation, then, to have all that. Like, I grew up when WCW was still around, and
oh, yeah.
It was like, that we loved WCW because of Sting, because he had face paint, we were kids, and that was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun, and so, it's really, like, they really blew it up into a big deal, man.
Yeah,
with the network
Monday
and everything.
Night, yeah, with the whole Monday Night Wars and everything that were going on in WCW, and then right now, they're not. It seems like the WWE right now is less concerned with television and more concerned with like getting subscriptions onto their network. Like for new subscribers, WrestleMania, their biggest event of the year, was free. Like if you signed up,
oh.
And it's like this cancel anytime kind of thing. So a lot of people were just like, "Yeah, $10," but like millions of people giving you $10, that is a lot of money.
I can only imagine. It must be so hard to actually be one of the people involved. You have to be such a professional performer in order to do it, not just a guy who's good at picking up another sweaty man. Like,
yes, you have. I mean, you've got to be really, really good. Like, in the ring, you have to be good. Like, if you want to be really successful, you've got to be good on the mic, called cutting a promo.
Yeah.
You just have to be an incredibly well-rounded performer. And there's some guys that are stronger in some ways, and some that are, you know.
Well, I mean, as a guy who performs for himself in a room with nobody to actually judge your performance, that's something that we both do as a voice, as people that use our voices for business.
Yep.
It's you don't know about live timing. You don't know about a microphone and how the PA system booms around the arena and how you have to account for that. And that's a learned skill as
Where
well.
To move the mic, everything like that. Yeah. It's my one of my dreams, like, before I die, I want to be involved in a live event. Like, I want to, oh God, so bad. I want to manage a tag team.
Yeah.
Like, I want to just be like, just, I want to go up to a promotion, and there's no like real local promotions here that I couldn't go up to any of them or anything like that. Like, I want to just walk in the door and just be like, give me a microphone, a minute, and two meatheads, and let me just make a tiny concert in your shoes. I'm going to rock your freaking socks. Like, I just want to so bad.
I can make that happen. I know we'll speak about this off air, but I know a guy who runs his own underground wrestling league here that's super fun that we go to every couple weeks. Or I haven't been to as many as my gang of friends have, but it's like, it's super fun, and it's a local opportunity to help promote stuff. We'll hook it up here. I'll introduce you guys.
All right.
Shout outs to Cody.
All right. I'm barely holding my crap together right now. Am I allowed to swear?
If you do, that's fine.
Okay.
I actually don't really have any rules on this, but okay. It just means more work for me. So.
That's fair. Okay. I will do my best to edit myself.
Thank you.
So you don't have to do it later.
Are you a local guy? Are you from here? Did you grow up here?
This is actually the only city in the entire world that I've ever lived in twice.
Oh.
I left home when I was like 18,
and
I started traveling around. I went to four different universities to get what I considered to be like a voice acting education, because like different schools specialize in different stuff, because there was no like voice acting degree or anything like that.
Yeah,
and I was doing musical theater and things like that, and I was just like, I really want to be a voice actor. How do I make that go? So I went to four different universities, and then I moved to Boston after that. I was in Japan for a little while.
Whoa.
And then just back and forth. Like, I've lived in almost every major city in Canada and the United States. I've been in Japan for a total of 3 years, three different times. London for a little while, Poland for 6 months. That was super weird. and I've traveled quite a bit.
In the pursuit of more knowledge or opportunities?
Well,
or
part of it was because I had no friends and watched a lot of anime, which is why I originally went to Japan, because I figured it was all like anime, and it is. So I went over there to teach English, and I did some acting while I was over there, you know, kind of on the, I wasn't really supposed to, because that's not what my visa was for, but they were like, hey, you're a white guy, go stand over there and be a white guy. All right, cool, awesome. There was actually one show I was on where I was like in like a courtroom scene, where I was both the judge and the guard, and they didn't care. They were just like, they put a wig on me in one, and like I talked to myself with cuts. It was amazing. It was so freaking weird.
Does that play into like sort of like I'll dance around this, but I think everyone will know what I'm saying. Does that play sort of into the stereotypes that maybe we work for other cultures where we're like, well, you can't, this culture isn't good at telling this culture apart from itself. Like, does that play out? Or were they tongue-in-cheek making you talk to yourself?
No, that was not tongue-in-cheek. They were just like, oh, you're one white guy for two roles. Good enough. Awesome. Do it.
And it would dupe the audience, like, some of it.
As far as I know.
Where in Japan did you live?
So the first time I was in Japan, I was in a town called Sagaken, which is in the middle of Kyushu. It's one of the only flat parts like of Japan. Big hot air balloon festival. Everybody bikes everywhere, like thousands of bicycles forever.
Cool.
And then the second time was Osaka.
Yeah.
And then the third time was Tokyo.
Cool. I'm asking because I'm honeymooning there in 6 months, and so I'm
oh,
like,
dude.
You're going to be a great resource for this.
Yeah, you got it, man. Whatever you need, I got you. People are going to want to touch your beard.
Yeah.
And your hair.
Oh, should I start growing the beard to make it even...
No, because then people won't talk to you. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
What? Why?
Yeah. Could you're a big, scary white guy.
Oh, I mean, I'm already 6'5".
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
It's going to be hilarious. Yeah.
See, that's why I like going to Japan. I'm 5'7". I'm 5'6". I'm 5'7" when I feel insecure. but when I went to Japan, like, I... Like, everything was my size. It was great. I was average height. I could reach things on the top shelf.
Yeah.
I fit in chairs. My feet touched the floor. Like, it was majestic.
I'm sorry to laugh. It's just funny to hear someone describe it like that. That's, I, you know, I'm beyond normal height. So, like, I'm at 6'5". I'm no longer considered to, I'm not just tall. I'm, like, really tall.
Oh, yeah, I know. When we met, I could tell if you blew your nose or not. I get it.
And so, I have a lot of friends who are like 5'6", let's say,
right,
like yourself, because mm-hmm. I think that there's a certain, like, the middle is about 5'10". That's what you're shooting for, I feel like. People, like, that are comfortable putting people on TV, on movies and stuff like that.
Right.
Like, 5'10 is a perfect height for that or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like people from either end of that can bond over not being
by that. Being, like, that average height and be like, man, sometimes I knock my head on doors. My feet don't touch the floor, man.
Yeah, there's that dichotomy, there's that juxtaposition that works out pretty well. That's fascinating. So you've been able to use voice acting, or just an interest in voice acting, to go around the world. Have you been poor that whole time when you've been?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh God,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I went over there, like, I taught English in Japan. Like,
oh, cool.
I didn't do, like, voice acting in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, I did some, like, side acting and things like that.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
I've always performed, but there's always the, you know, like, what are you? I'm an actor. How do you eat? Oh, I wait tables.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's that.
That's interesting, but because a lot of people get pigeonholed into something like, where, like, if you go to LA, everyone's an actor, right? But, like,
yeah,
that opens your eyes a little bit, maybe, that, like, you got yourself educated to do this. You didn't just show up and say, I'm a pretty face, I'm an actor.
Oh, well, I mean, it's not pretty face, because I'm sure you've heard the joke, as a DJ, a face made for radio. You
a know. Face for voice acting.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a face for voice acting. But it's a weird business to kind of get into, because I have an agent in LA. I go to LA for work sometimes.
Cool.
I have an agent here. You know, I work here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty much like I'm going to talk anyway, and if you pay me, I'll say the things you want me to say, yeah, and I'll go wherever you want me to go. Like, I've got a gig up in Vancouver next month,
yeah,
that I'm doing voice acting for, and a live action component, which is neat.
Cool.
So it's a weird business to get into, and it is who you know that helps you in the business.
Yeah.
But once you actually get your foot in the door, you can't suck. You can't. You have to be able to knock it out of the park, because that's the expectation. I vouched for you.
Yeah.
Here's a thing. Just, yeah, once your foot's in the door, you can't suck, or else you're not going to work.
Well, but then how do you, I'm going to go to Poland? Like, what's the opportunity there that, like, drags you in?
Oh, acting. It was, the opportunity wasn't for voice acting. It was, I really wanted to travel. Like, I went to school for voice acting, and then went to Boston for a little while, and was working in a rigging company there, in Southie, in Baston. You know, it's freaking wicked retarded. wicked pissa. But then I wanted to go to Japan, because I wanted to take the opportunity while I was younger to be able to go without it affecting much of my life. And then that's where I met my soon-to-be lady friend, my yeah. wife, who is Canadian and totally real. And then,
that's a pretty strange thing. You got a qualifier you got to put on there.
Huh? Yeah, no, she's totally real. She doesn't people, so I have to, like, you know, it's the whole, like, oh, I've got a girlfriend, but she's Canadian. You can't call her or anything like that. She's Canadian, totally real. And you can't call her or anything like that. And then we kind of started traveling, like, we lived in Japan for a while, and then we were just like, look, we want to travel. Like, we moved to yeah. Seattle after that for a little while. And then just, we were just like, we wanted to travel. Where's a good place? Poland is hiring. We have English teaching experience. Let's go and do that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, no, that was a horrible mistake. But from Poland, we were able to travel around there, and I've always practiced. I've always done some sort of performance
yeah.
to kind of feed myself. But when I, you know, my life just kind of went like, and voice acting sort of fell by the wayside. So when we were sort of done traveling, we came back. We moved to New York City. We were in New York City for a little while, and that's when, like, I had a full-time day job working for a silver company. Which is very, very weird. A French silver company. That was an odd job. And did some voice acting, like, as I was like, New York, okay, I've got to get my feet back in
yeah.
this and start driving up a little bit. And then from New York, we moved to Vancouver, BC.
Because she was Canadian.
Yeah, well,
and
she's
totally
Canadian.
Real.
Yeah, totally real. She's Canadian, totally real. She got a job up there, and I was like, cool, we can go there. And then I started getting, I was like, okay, I need to give this an honest shot.
Yeah.
And then my wife, you know, my wife and I, again, who's totally real, had a conversation And it was like, okay, here's the goal. If you can reach this goal, then this is something you can give an honest shot to. And I was super hungry and I just went after it. Cool. It was definitely one of those, like when I introduce myself at conventions or anything like that, it's just like, hey, I'm Jacob. What's going on? It's just trying to be friendly, not trying to stink of that desperation.
Because, ah, I need work. I'm hungry.
Yeah, exactly. I need to work. Oh my God.
I'll bite your face.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'll do anything you want. Yeah, exactly. Don't do that. Okay. Just be like, hey, that's awesome. Be like, oh, cool. What do you do? I'm a voice actor. Great. Yeah. Awesome. You want to exchange business cards? I'm like, absolutely. And, you know, if you want to check out my work, my reels are on my website. I don't suck. I'm very happy to prove it.
The website, makewordshappen.com. Again, makewordshappen.com. What a great tagline and website that you got there. That's cool.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I watched a lot of pro wrestling, and that influenced a lot of how I network and how I speak.
It doesn't get the attention that it deserves for being the best written and executed soap opera ever. It's like the storytelling and the ability to move people to action is incredible.
And
the minds behind it are insane. I don't know who's actually behind the scenes pulling the strings. You know, they have characters, but I don't know if those guys are actually influential or if there's like a mastermind behind it that's Krang inside of a vagina. But yeah, I
have had friends that are in the industry. Like, I can tell you generally how it works, like the general politics, but it depends on when I start talking, there are a couple of topics when people get me started talking about it. Like, I talk for 5 minutes, and then I give them an off ramp, like very directly, very like, if you want me to stop talking about this right now, there are no hard feelings.
And
you can
scene.
Just say, yeah, exactly. It's just like, that's cool. Yeah. And most people are so bought into the social contract that they're like, no, that's fine. And they're being really, really polite. I can see it. I can read the cues, and I promptly don't care. Yeah. I'm just like, I gave you the chance. I was direct.
Let's go.
Let's rock and roll. I cornered a person on a, they were on an airplane, okay?
Yeah.
I was sitting next to somebody who was on the way to the Game Developers Conference, and somebody got stuck with me, and I was talking about pro wrestling for an hour and a half. Like, and they could not go anywhere. Just pure terror in their eyes.
Oh, no,
and I was just
done?
Like, nope, I gave you the chance. Now it's go time.
Okay, well, you never really did answer my question. You said Seattle's the only place where you've lived twice.
Oh, I've lived twice, yes.
Are you from here originally?
I'm not from here originally. I'm originally from upstate New York.
Oh, cool.
A little town called Saratoga Springs, and I left when I was 18 because, nope.
Okay.
Yeah. Saratoga Springs is like 3/4 of the year. It's an old Victorian town. 3/4 of the year, it's a drunk college town because Skidmore College is there.
Okay.
And then 1/4 of the year because they have 2 race courses. They have the thoroughbred track and the harness track. Harness track is open year-round.
Yeah.
Thoroughbred track only opens during like the summer months.
Yeah.
And then everybody with their big fancy hats and all of their money just floods into town and people rent out their houses for way too much. And I was just like, I can't be here anymore. I got to go. So I left.
You are wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
I like this a lot. Okay, so here you are. It's whatever time. It's internet time, and you're here in a studio talking to me. Okay, by my hours, I keep weird hours. But what does a day look like for you? Like, are you putting the rest of your day on hold because you're here talking to me right now?
It depends on the day, and I don't like this. This is the highlight of my freaking week.
Oh,
like,
good.
I've been stoked about this.
Yeah.
The whole week when you invited me here, I was like, yeah, because I listen to you every morning
when
I drive my wife to work. So, who again.
Totally real.
Yep.
Thanks.
Now, I usually get up around 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
I make breakfast and lunch and stuff and take wife in car to job.
Yeah.
And then I usually come home, get the chores done, dishes done, things like that.
Yeah.
Record all of my auditions that I have for the day early in the morning. And then usually do like about an hour's practice, like warm up and things like that. Practice just like reading different commercials and different characters and spots. Try to like work on my range and all that fun stuff because it, you know, practice is important.
Yeah.
I usually spend about an hour every day just like dicking around behind the mic because that's how you know, if you're not doing it, it's not happening. You're not going to be able to like, it's a skill. You've got to keep it warmed up
and
see what I can press and what sort of weird things I can do. And then, you know, it's the housework, emails, staying in touch with people. Voice acting is only like about 2%. And I completely stole this line, by the way, from the documentary, I Know That Voice, which is done by Joe DiMaggio, the voice of Bender.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. And he put together a wonderful, wonderful documentary, which is, I think, on Netflix, called I Know That Voice, which is awesome. And one of the gentlemen who, unfortunately, I cannot tell you what his name was.
Fine.
I forget. But voice acting is about 2% behind the mic. 98% of it is networking and paperwork.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's, you know, I work 98% very, very hard at things that I don't like necessarily. I mean, the networking's really good because I love people and I actually like talking to people and I'm a true extrovert, which makes living in Seattle freaking weird.
Weird.
Oh, God. But it's 98% to do the 2% I really, really love.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's, I think people take for granted the fact that, like, I do a radio show for 4 hours a day, but there's 2 hours of prep that goes in and then right. 2 hours afterwards of doing clerical things.
It, yeah.
Like, that's still a job.
It's,
still
yeah, gotta, it's a job. Just because you enjoy something doesn't mean it's not work.
I'll borrow from Cypress Hill and say it's a fun job, but it's still a job. Mm-hmm. Like, there's still, like, perks and benefits to doing this, which are awesome, and yep. that, like, it's probably way better than pushing paper somewhere else.
Yes.
Me responding to emails hilariously with animated GIFs is, like, is part of my job, which is awesome, but I still have to respond to emails all day or whatever. So.
Exactly. And it's the thing, like, I've done the corporate thing, and I've done this, and this is 1,000 times better, but it is still a job. Even if you enjoy it, it is still work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which and is not something that a lot of people really understand.
Well, how about, like, can you keep hours? Is that possible, or is it a all the time, always going?
Getting a work-life balance is really, really important because when I had first started out and I was super, super hungry, it caused problems in my personal life. So getting that work-life balance and actually having times where you just shut things down or you set like a priority threshold, like if it's 8 or above, then you have to respond right away. Like if I get an audition at 9 o'clock at night and it's due 10 a.m. the next morning, I've got no choice. I've got to haul my butt out of bed. Like I've had an overseas client asked for something at 2 a.m. when I was living in Vancouver at one point. I had to haul my butt out of bed, take a half an hour, warm up, get back behind the booth, and then still be up at 6 to go and, you know, and
do your life
and do my life. But there's a work-life balance. Like you have to make sure that you take the time for the rest of your life. It's all of these responsibilities are to get like the things that you want, the things that fulfill you, the things that you love. It's work and life. It's not just all career all the time or else I wouldn't have my totally real relationship.
How stressful is your job?
It depends on the day. I just went and did a recording in LA a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
And I was in the booth, and this is like one of my first big LA jobs. Because I'm still like, as far as voice acting goes, like I'm hungry and I'm going after it and I do it full time and it sustains me, but I am still pretty much a baby in the industry.
Like how far in?
2 years full time.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 years about full time.
Yeah, my VO buddy that does commercial voiceover said give it 8 to 10 years before you can really consider yourself doing it.
I no disrespect to your friend. I consider myself to be doing it.
He didn't say doing it, I should say, until your, he did radio full time.
Okay.
And then he did voiceover on the side, and it took him 10 years of like putting that effort into that.
Yes.
And similar businesses, different skills, even though similar skills.
Got it.
Similar but different. And then after 8 to 10 years, he was finally able to be like, okay, I can now make more money doing voiceover
than I can anything else.
Than doing that.
So you definitely have to put in the time. Like you have to, it is a slog. It is a grind.
Yeah.
Thank God I played so many MMOs or else I wouldn't be like emotionally equipped to handle a lot of the repetitive
things.
You're
only a level 41 voiceover artist,
exactly,
and you got to get to 70.
Yeah, I have definitely not hit, I'm not even close to the cap yet. No, and then once you get to the cap, then there's all the epic equipment and legendaries. And anyway, sorry, watch where you step. I just dropped some nerd on the floor.
Yeah, there you go.
But it does get stressful sometimes, especially when you're in the booth, like with, like in an ensemble recording with people that you really respect and admire. Like for the Baldur's Gate, the announce party. I went to Edmonton to go to that party and I met Mark Meer, who is the voice of Commander Shepard in Mass Effect and an incredible improvisational actor and somebody that I have tried to model myself and my career after to some respect. Like somebody called me Mini Mark Meer the other day and I almost like pooped a bucket of kittens. And he, like meeting him was he's amazing. He's lovely. And being in a game with him and meeting him like in a professional capacity and not just fanboying all over the floor.
Yeah.
Like that's hard. Like meeting somebody you respect and admire and not immediately trying to hump their leg is difficult and stressful. And especially when you're being in the booth with someone you respect and admire and being like, oh my God, I have to be as good as this person. Like when I did Baldur's Gate, like Jennifer Hale and Mark Meer, who are both shepherds in a BioWare game, and that's my personal mountaintop. They're in the game. I had to be as good as they were. God.
Out of the gate, too.
Out of the gate. Just boom, go. Jesus. Yeah, so it was, man.
Okay, well, that's really fascinating. So you get to, you've done live
ensemble
before.
I'm not as good as they are,
hey,
by
you
the
didn't
way.
Make it, you didn't, just, you didn't project that
okay,
at all.
Okay, good. So, awesome.
Like, you seem very respectful with that, which is cool.
Yep.
I never think about how, like, the difference between sitting at home in your own bedroom converted into a studio space and recording stuff as many takes as you want versus being there with the other actors and having to hit the marks and having a good day every day.
Right. Yeah, you have to. I mean, if you're there, it's a good day every day. Like, it's once you're in the booth and especially because you don't know how other actors are going to react to certain things because actors are crazy.
Yeah.
All of us. I am not taking myself out of this group at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the nature of the job.
I'll quote you saying, pooped a bucket of kittens. That definitely something a crazy person would say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not. Filters, very challenging for me. It's just, I lost my point.
When you're working with a...
Oh, yes. When you're working with... Because you don't know how other people are going to react. It's the dynamic between the other people in the booth, the director, who you're paired with. Like, ensemble recording, I love doing it. Being able to react off of somebody, actually look at them and like look at their physicality and everything like that is amazing.
Well, explains the improv. You're at an improv show watching that and stuff. It's like,
yes. Yeah. And I improv is the best in my mind. Again, Jacob Fu voice acting. Improv is the greatest tool a voice actor can have, straight up.
I think that improv in general, just as a life skill, my boss and I go back and forth about this all the time. I'm like, the best thing I ever did was take an improv class because it taught me how to feel safe taking a risk.
Yes.
With an idea and how to let your mind be your mind.
Yes.
Let you be in the moment a little bit. And she said, well, I would suggest that for everybody, the best thing you can do is get therapy. And I was like, wow, both of them are sort of similar, where you're learning to express yourself and doing that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Maybe a combination of, if every voice actor got a little bit of therapy and a little bit of improv, you might be fantastic from there.
Some people, especially when you're starting out, you can't afford therapy.
Yeah.
Improv classes are way cheaper.
That's true. All right, fair. Okay, so but your job can like weigh down on you, especially if you're not getting gigs and stuff, I would imagine. If you're like, you said, okay, let's go back a step here.
Yeah.
You said that every day you do some auditions and stuff. Is that an agent that's throwing you auditions?
So I get agents. I have two agents that throw me auditions.
Yeah.
Mike O'Dell with BBA Talent out of LA, who is an amazing, amazing man. I have a couple like people that throw me auditions here in Seattle. Melissa Baldoof from Big Fish Northwest. She's really fantastic. She's really great. So generally, like auditions either come from my personal context, like things that I curate when I was representing myself for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then having a couple of agents, it's just like, here's the thing. Here's what it's due. Here's the sheet. Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's
you just bang it out at a home studio.
Generally, sometimes they do want you to go into a local studio. Sometimes, like, you actually have to go to the client's recording studio so they can actually see you and meet you. Like, it just depends. Like, whatever they want, I will do because I like working.
Well, but it's interesting now because of technology, obviously.
Yes.
It has made it so. Or has it, I should say. Has technology made it so you don't just have to be in LA and New York?
I am doing my best to make that true.
Okay.
Yeah, because I have certain factors in my life. Like I spend a lot of time going where the work is.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of it is in LA. A lot of it is in New York.
Yeah.
But I have clients, like I've had clients from China that found me online. I've had clients from Japan that just found me online. So there is definitely work out there. I don't necessarily subscribe to the fact that, like, if you want to make a living at voice acting, you have to be in LA.
Obviously.
It makes it a butt ton easier because that's a lot where the work is. That's where it's centralized. But there are people that do, Like, because Funimation, for example, is in Texas, there are people that almost, like, exclusively work in Texas, and that's how they make their living. They're not famous. You don't become a voice actor to be famous.
No way. You're
behind a mic. But if you want to make a living at it, you're not necessarily constrained by being in L.A. or New York. There are people that feel very differently about this, but this is how I feel about it.
Well, if you can make it work.
If you can make it work, great. Find the work that works for you.
Well, okay, so what happened? Like, your job is a performance job. Like, if you're a soccer player and you blow out your knee, you can't play soccer, but you have a contract that you get paid and there's clauses there and stuff. When you get allergies here at the beginning of spring in Seattle and you can't perform for a few days, how does that affect your life?
First off, I don't have any allergies, which I am very, very fortunate. Yeah, let's knock on all of the wood. I'm very fortunate to not have allergies. Like, right now, I have a cold.
Oh, wow.
But there are things that you can do to get around that. There are certain manipulations of... Oh, God, this is going to sound so douchey.
Manipulations
of the apparatus, which is, you know, pretty much like all of the stuff from the top of your head right down to your taint, like that kind of controls your voice, and you can put your voice different places to kind of get around it.
He has very good posture for everyone listening. You could tell that you do this because you're sitting up straight and your spine is straight up and down. You're very well aligned.
Yep. And one of the best pieces of breathing advice I should say ever read, I didn't get it like personally, was from Kristen Chenoweth, breathe from your hoo-hoo. And if you imagine that, it just kind of engages your diaphragm and kind of gets the whole, just imagine you're breathing. There you go. It works. See? I just saw the light go on in your eyes.
This is hilarious.
Yeah. So if I get a cold or anything like that, you just have to take care of yourself. And there are tricks and things that you can do to get around that, especially if you need to do an audition and it's going to take you like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You can like get yourself back to normal or at least something approximating normal in order to get that thing out if you absolutely have to. Now, if you have to go and do like work, then it's going to be like honey and tea and go and pee are like going to be the things that you're going to have to do in order to get through the job. Now, if it's understanding and you can reschedule, that's great. But sometimes you're locked into things and you have to. Like there are a couple of things that I've recorded where I've been terribly, terribly ill. But you have to go if you respect the work and you respect your job and you respect the people that are giving you money to make language with your word hole, then you figure out a way to get it done. And that's my mentality. I do have an old school kind of theater mentality. Like I've performed plays with like broken noses and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
Cause I am an idiot.
Sometimes you also got to know when not to.
Yeah. You have to know when the limit is. That's the work-life balance. And at 36 now, I recently had a birthday at 36 now. I feel like I'm just starting to get a handle on that. And I can feel 50-year-old me in the future judging me and thinking that I'm a moron.
Well, happy belated 36 birthdays.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's important. Now, I can only imagine that before Washington Health Plan Finder came around or whatever it is, that if you weren't married to a very real woman from Canada, that
was totally real.
Insurance would be a difficult part of this type of freelance life that you lead.
Depends on whether you are in the union or not in the union.
Are you in the union or not in the union?
This is a weird question.
You don't have to answer if you don't feel comfortable. That's fine too.
Well, it's
if you're in the union, you get insurance through the union?
Yeah, if you're in the union, you get insurance through the union. That answers your question.
Yeah. What's the union? What is it called?
SAG-AFTRA.
Oh, okay. Okay, so then you get SAG insurance or whatever.
Yep, and exactly. You get SAG insurance and things like that. This is a hot button topic for many performers. Some people are just like 100%, yes, union, good. Some people are like, no, non-union, because for voice acting, the union is a giant lumbering beast and doesn't move fast. It is a difficult topic, and I'm still trying to navigate the waters of everything and trying to find what works for me.
Sure.
And that's, like, especially with performance, that's just kind of how it ends up. Whatever works for you should be what works. And there's going to be a whole lot of noise of people telling you where to go and how to be and, like, go this way, go that way. But in the end, because we're in the end.
Yes.
You have to trust yourself and be able to accept whatever consequences that brings.
How many characters do you have? How many have you developed in your arsenal?
Like, right, just that I can pull up right off the bat?
Or if you gave it an hour of getting into your headspace. Like, I imagine you have more than just the voice you're giving us right now. As an actor, you probably can, and I know you do really well with accents and whatnot as well.
Oh, thank you.
But how many characters would you say you have?
Like, just off the top of my head?
Yeah, do you have 10? Do you have 2? Is it
50?
Oh, wow. And how do you develop a new character when you're,
mostly by annoying my wife, like, okay. 'Cause I just talk and that's one of the best ways, in my mind, again, it's one of the best ways to develop characters.
Yeah.
Another way to do that is to do bad celebrity impressions.
Oh yeah.
Like most of the Simpsons are just bad celebrity impressions.
Sure.
Like Hank Azaria, who does 1,000 voices on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of the things that, like, when I heard him say this next thing, I will say that he said, it really turned a light on for me. Yes, that made sense. Okay, good.
Your air math is fantastic. That was well played. Good act out.
It's just bad celebrity impressions. Like, just try to do a celebrity, like an impression of a celebrity.
Yeah.
Your body will take over, and what you think it is, record it, and that's a new voice.
God,
done.
I never think about it as a person who's behind a microphone. The only piece of advice I ever got was from my father, and he said, you should smile more when you talk so you sound like you're having a good time. And I was like, okay.
Yeah,
and that's like
great.
In terms of like, but there's never been an act out when I'm doing a character. If I'm talking like a dinosaur, I'm not like stomping around with my short little arms or anything like that.
Oh, yeah,
which
totally.
I should be.
Yeah.
I feel like an idiot.
Your body, it's a really, really great way to trick yourself.
Yeah.
Like the physicality, even though you're voice acting, like even if you're just behind the mic and nobody can see you,
yeah,
your body takes over and automatically triggers in your, like all the muscles and everything,
yeah,
like that, triggers all of it just subconsciously. So you don't have to sit there and try to consciously manipulate every little muscle or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just lift your arms up and be like, like, bleh.
So you think you have 50 characters?
Probably.
Some people are the types that started having characters when they were 5 and they could play with their toys, and it was like you could keep yourself entertained by being like, I'm the dinosaur.
I didn't have many friends when I was a kid, so
yeah,
I talked to myself a lot.
Yeah.
Now I make money at it.
Yeah, exactly. It paid off. Huh? You stuck with it.
Did.
Way to stick with something.
Yay, turning trauma into money.
That's what the part where you said you were screwed up in the pooping a bucket of kittens.
Yeah, yeah,
all,
there you go.
Full circle. We're, mm-hmm, we're getting there.
Yeah. I'm so lonely.
So,
what?
Oh, no. I feel uncomfortable. Oh. How do you... Well, like, what are the inspirations for these characters?
A lot of them... Okay.
Is it bad impressions? Or
a lot of it is bad impressions. A lot of it is just me talking and just doing bits by myself.
Yeah.
I have one dude... Like, I just have one dude, and it's a voice, like... who always... It's one dude who always talks about his Uncle Janosch, who he thinks is the best thing in the world.
Okay.
And like...
It's very improv-y. You have like these very specifics that are like, you're believable. It's like, who is this person? And like, what's the relationship? You're doing Crow in front of me.
Like, Uncle Janosch, he's very great man. He's great man. He invented sandwich. He takes sand, he take wish, put them together, boom, sandwich. Uncle Janosch is great man. Great man, yes. It's stuff like that. And,
does my eye roll, does it come across?
Oh,
on,
yeah, I could hear it. It was great. And a lot of it is just like bad, like my shirt today is a Star Wars shirt, and
it's wonderful.
Says, this is where it's at. It's,
oh,
Star Wars and a pun, and I love it. So it's just, it's playing around and just doing inspiration or seeing people and being like, they have a very specific voice, or like a way, like coming up with a story, like looking across the street, coming up with a story of a complete stranger, and then just trying to do that, inhabit that, and more characters come out.
Before you went full time doing this, if ever, maybe it didn't happen,
mm-hmm,
but like, did you ever find yourself losing your touch for the imagination, losing your connection, not having your finger on the pulse of your imagination and finding yourself lost?
Yeah. Yeah. There have been a couple of times where it's, you run out of fuel.
Yeah.
Like, especially like Poland was hard.
Yeah.
Like we were, yeah, that was a tough time. That was a tough 6 months.
Yeah.
And yeah, I lost a lot of inspiration. I wasn't talking to myself. I wasn't smiling. It was just, yeah, I ran out of fuel. And you have to manufacture that sometimes, you know, like, especially if you're just not feeling it today, sometimes you can have an off day. And yeah, that was definitely one of the times where like I lost a lot of fuel.
How important is your imagination to what you do?
If I didn't have an imagination, like the thought about it right now, thinking not having an imagination, not being able to like close my eyes or imagine, you know, that poster, for example, some like Japanese dude has been hiding there the entire time and like jumps out in the suit. Yeah, exactly. Like in the actual, like in the wall, like ninjas and stuff, just popping out of these tiles and whatnot. Like if I didn't have that, one, I feel like I'd be incredibly bored, and just the thought of it makes me very, very sad. It reminds me of like, what was it, The Labyrinth? I think there's scenes in The Labyrinth where like they're just kind of like sitting and sad and like, yeah, it's just, I'm getting sad now thinking about not having an imagination. Like it is everything to me. All of us are stories, and my imagination just, it creates those. It's just, I can't imagine not having.
Do you have a character that you've created that is your favorite, that like, that you find yourself like, let me rephrase.
Like
this.
My go-to?
Well, all of us, I think, have a secondary voice that we think in, or that we give to dogs when they're walking by, or that like that you slip into to give yourself that kind of a little bit of crazy to get yourself motivated. And I think that that's kind of like, maybe it's a crutch sometimes, but it's a useful tool to get the mind working. Is there one that you slip into where you, when you're annoying your wife, who's totally real?
Who's totally real. Yep.
When you're annoying her, is there a voice that you default to?
I consciously try not to.
Cool.
Yeah. Like I consciously try not to go to this one go-to thing, because then that will be, when I have like an audition come in or something like that, I'll be like, oh, this guy'd be good for that. You'll lock yourself into, or you'll slip into that one area. So I consciously try not to slip into one voice. Of course I have my favorites.
Yeah.
And my new favorite is in my character from Baldur's Gate, which,
okay, so let's talk about that. Is the game out yet?
No, it's out. Yeah.
Okay, so Baldur's
March
Gate
31st
is a, I have this like, maybe I'm wrong about it, I should really text my old roommate about this, but I have this memory of my roommate in college back, let's call this 1999.
Oh yeah. Okay. I love these stories.
And we lived in one of these apartments where a bunch of college students lived in all of the apartments, and it was chaos, just barely controlled chaos.
Oh, of course.
Okay, and it was like a crazy party, and flashbangs would go off from sometimes because the cops would go, you know.
Just so
like
a college apartment.
It was like 25 buildings full of stupid idiots, okay? Mm-hmm. But each building had Ethernet. It was like the beginning of this in America. We could link up all of our computers together, and we would all play StarCraft together. That was StarCraft 1, and that's what we would do, is we'd spend 2.5 hours playing Zerg. And
you're about 36?
Yeah, 36.
Okay, good.
On the money.
Oh, good. Yeah. Then, yes, we've had the exact same experience.
So it was a lot of that, except for the one roommate. He was totally down to play, but like he didn't talk a lot, and he was, you'd be like, where's Dan? And so you'd go to the back, and Dan would be at his computer looking at just ASCII characters coming up, and there was the most limited amount of graphics on the side of like what your armor's condition was in or something like that, or what you had armed or something like that. But it was all it was all script that was coming up, and he was just reading it and responding to it with simple keystrokes and stuff.
That sounds like the early, like, yeah,
like almost like a BBS game, like almost like one point it was dial up, and I think it was Baldur's Gate. I think is what it was.
Baldur's Gate
Quest. Baldur's Quest.
No, I don't think so. That you're thinking of RuneQuest, I believe.
Let me let's just for the sake of,
I'm gonna go with RuneQuest.
Okay,
I'll put my nerd cred on the line.
But I've heard these. Baldur's Gate has been a video game title for forever, a D&D style title.
It's not D&D style. It's D&D.
Oh, just applied D&D.
It is D&D. It's a like Dungeons and Dragons license.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's set in the Forgotten Realms.
Oh, I did not know that.
Straight up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's part of canon. Like,
oh, okay. I had no idea that it was that. And so you being a giant nerd, obviously, that's what we've talked about.
Mm.
How do you get an audition for this? How do you get the phone call? Where does this all start from?
Okay, so for Baldur's Gate, actually, I was house sitting for my brother-in-law in Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada.
Yeah.
Which, again, totally real country. Where my wife is from.
I think we all agree that Canada is real. Canada
I've met some folks.
I've been there, and as far as, and that's a huge conspiracy to keep me off the trail. I think For sure. It's a real thing.
So I was house sitting for my brother-in-law and had a client that was in Edmonton, Alberta that I had done some work for. And they were like, hey, you should come out to lunch with me and my lady friend. And, you know, I'm going to introduce you to somebody else. Amber Scott, a beautiful, beautiful, lovely, lovely person.
Okay.
Beautiful, beautiful soul. Beautiful. Just she's amazing.
Okay.
And I met her at lunch. But the evening before that, I went to a party. Just like a movie viewing party for my buddy because I was house sitting for a week. I had nothing to do. I was like, cool, I might as well take care of these dogs, house sit, and then, you know, just go. Like, I have friends up here. I'm going to go and see them. A gentleman named Dave Gross who does writing. He's an incredible writer. Has written quite a few novels and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, you can find his name in a Barnes & Noble. Like, fantastic.
Wow,
he's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
Yep, he's my favorite jerk in the world.
We all know one of those.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, he's my favorite jerk in the world. He looked at me at that party and he said, I don't know what it is about you that hits my bully button, but man, do I love making fun of you. And I was like, that's cool. Thanks. I love you too, Dave. You're the best.
At least you know what it is, though. At least you know what the relationship stands at.
Yep. So at that party, I met one of the writers at Beamdog. Andrew, who actually wrote the character, and like we talked for a little while and whatnot. Now, I don't know exactly this is how the story goes, but like how I understand it is that like there's like a two main writers on at Beamdog, and then like a side writer, Liam Essler. And I met him at the party, and
Beamdog?
Beamdog is there are folks that worked at BioWare. They moved off from BioWare. From what I understand, this is not like
I'm not the official.
Like,
you're giving us a sketch.
Exactly. I'm giving you a very, very like sketch. I don't represent Beamdog in any way. There we go. So, although they are very, very awesome people. Now, they left, some of them left BioWare. They took the Baldur's Gate franchise and some of the Dungeons & Dragons like franchises with them, polished them up and put them in a modern era. Like, they did the enhanced editions for Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, and Icewind Dale.
Okay.
So you can play them on, like, iPad and things like that.
Okay.
The first way that I heard about them is that I had a buddy that was deployed to Afghanistan, who I talked to about every 3 days just to see how he was going on Skype and whatnot.
Yeah.
And Baldur's Gate kept him sane while he was over there because he was playing it on his iPad.
Oh, cool.
So, like, I knew who these people were because I was like, thank you for helping my friend. You are amazing. Thank you. So I'd like meeting Andrew at that party, like I was able to actually be like, thank you, you helped keep my friend not go banana sandwich. That's great, you're amazing. And then I met him, and apparently how the story goes, and again, this isn't official, I don't know, but this is how I heard it, is that Andrew went up to Amber, the other writer, and said, hey, I just met Glint. I met him, like in real life, like I met him.
Oh, it's okay, your character's called Glint?
Glint yeah. Gardner Sunson. He's a gnome, he's a cleric, and he worships Berevar Cloakshadow, who is the gnomish god of trickery and theft and whatnot.
Okay.
So like a lot of people think he's a thief, but no, he's a priest of this god. He's a cleric, so he has healing spells and whatnot. Sorry, excuse me, nerding.
Did you have any grasp of these characters beforehand? Had you been involved in this world? When you heard about this opportunity and you knew about, did you know what Glint was already?
No, see, Glint is one of the new characters for one of the new games.
Okay, same question without the Glint part.
Okay, yes, I knew everything about Baldur's Gate forever.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
No, it was definitely one of those, like, yes, let me tell you about my Lord and Savior, Savarok. Like, it was just, who's the villain in the game? Anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, I knew all, it was a huge nerd thing. I knew all about it. But I was like, thank you very much for keeping my, but this is the whole desperation thing, like just trying to keep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, cool.
Barely keeping my stuff together.
Yeah.
So I talked with him, and apparently he went up to Amber and said, I met Glint. Like, this is the guy. And she was like, well, we've got other people and whatnot. And then she was the one that I met the next day, completely separate lunch. And I met her, and, you know, and we were just talking and things like that. And apparently, like, she went to Andrew and said, no, I met Glint. And then it was me. And then I went in and auditioned. We set up an audition later the week, and I sat down and I read for Glint, and they were like, yep, okay, you're good. That's fine.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, like, you know, it's still, I mean, it's who you know, but you have to not suck, because I still had to go. It doesn't matter that they were like, we really like you and blah, blah, blah. They didn't just like hand me a role or anything. I still had to go through the entire process. I had to get approved by like the whole, you know, it, they still have, It's who you know that gets your foot in the door, and then you can't suck. Like, you've got to take the chances and run with them as fast as you can. So, and I, Glint is like my new favorite voice. I talk to myself as Glint.
Okay, there you go.
Constantly. So I get, that's the guy that pops up in my head. Yeah.
Do you play the game at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm working through it now.
What's that like?
Awesome.
And what's it like to hear yourself?
I have to keep it away from my wife because I'm really annoying her by just going like, like I'm. So speaking on safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing to be canon, to be in a franchise that I've played for a very long time. Baldur's Gate is one of the reasons why I'm a voice actor, because it was one of the very first BioWare games. It's one of the reasons why I like BioWare so much. Like is way too weak of a word, but I don't want to freak out right now.
Yeah, keep it together.
Yeah, keep it together. Just keep it together, man. But it's part of the reason why I'm a voice actor, like the old King's Quest games and Baldur's Gate, right? Exactly. Like, I still remember riddles from King's Quest V.
So I'm a Space Quest kid myself.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Actually, there's another. I want to tell you about another game later that I'm going to be in later this year. Okay. And if you like games like that, you're going to lose your mind about this one. Playing the game is just, it's absolutely surreal. It's so lovely and validating and beautiful and great, because I'm in the game with people that I admire and I was able to hold my own. I'm not saying I'm as good as or better than. It's just, I was able to.
You can walk away proud of it.
Oh my God, so proud. And if I never get to play Glint again, I'll be super sad, but hopefully people are going to love the new characters so much that they'll put them in other games. That's what I'm hoping for, because I love Glint to death.
Well, okay, so, you know, now you're talking about what you've done and what you're hoping for, this idea of continuing to do Glint in the future.
I would love that.
What's the end goal for you? Like, or maybe you've already reached it, I don't know. Like, maybe you can be content in the moment and very Zen Buddhist, but, like, what's the destination you're trying to get to with this profession?
So I'm very much into mountaintops. Like, you want to, like, there is a goal, go after it as hard as you can.
There's always a taller mountain, though, somewhere
else. Yes, and that's why I call them mountaintops, because once you get to one, you have to make sure that you look at the next.
Yeah.
You can't stop. My current mountaintop is, like, the one that I'm going after as far as video games go, is a BioWare game.
Okay.
Like, that's where I'm aiming at. But being in this Beam Dog game is, like, because I'm in there with a whole bunch of people that, like, were in the original. Like, they brought back so many of the original voice actors who are the reason I am a voice actor.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's gratifying. So, like, my current mountaintop is BioWare, but I don't, that might be shifting right now because it's something I went after so much. And with Baldur's Gate, like, I might need to find another mountaintop. That might have been it. And I don't want to look back and be like, oh, that was it. Okay. So I want to have something to move towards.
Do you have any Pixar dreams, The Simpsons, animated shows,
you know,
Adult Swim?
Oh, man. Any Adult Swim, anything would be absolutely amazing. But I want to set my sights on those things, but I never want to expect them.
Yeah.
I want everything that comes to me, everything that I work for, everything that I get, to be satisfying.
Yeah, sure. You know? But, I mean, is it all in the video game world, or does it extend beyond that?
No, voice acting is such a broad thing, and I want to make my living at voice acting. So you can't always say, I'm going to do video games.
Yeah.
Like, if I only wanted to do video games, then I would just say, you know, poo-poo to other aspects of my life and move into a really cruddy apartment in LA and go after just video games. But commercials, animation, narration, it doesn't matter. I love the work itself. I love video games. Video games got me my start. I love video games. They're my major stress relief. If I just did video games for the rest of my career, I'd be overjoyed.
Yeah.
But I will do whatever it is. I don't want to say no to opportunity or anything that comes my way.
Jacob Burgess at makewordshappen.com. Dude, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
You've been listening to So You're in Seattle with Gregor. Follow him on Twitter at Gregor1077. and find more episodes online at 1077theend.com. So You're in Seattle is a Burrito Butt production.
Yeah, you're a good dog, Chowder.